From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Political commentator and investigative journalist, you're with Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're into the third hour of this live broadcast now. We're connecting a great friend of the show and also great analyst, Daniel Spaulding, in a couple of minutes. We'll patch him in from the Far East. We'll talk about the G20, but also a postmortem on the U.S. midterms. There's a lot of moving parts on this, and Trump's thrown his hat into the ring this week, officially. Announcement at Mar-a-Lago. Interesting. The reactions have been interesting. And just a couple of days earlier, after Ron DeSantis, you know, Florida governor, big win, huge mandate, ran on a freedom platform, killed the competition, turned it into a red state. Big success. So right after that, everybody's thinking, you know, it's going to be, is this the heir apparent? Is it DeSantis or Trump? Ooh, we got a split in the Republican Party. Big problems, internecine warfare, internal warfare, right? Palace intrigue, all of the rest of it. How are we going to resolve this? All of a sudden, a lot of that melted away after Trump announced he's running for president in 2024. America's comeback begins now. Those are the words of Trump. And after that evening at Mar-a-Lago, in Florida, at his residency there, that pretty impressive speech. And Trump can talk for 2 hours off the cuff, not a problem, unlike Biden, who can't talk for 5 minutes without stumbling or can't read his notes, or whatever. It's embarrassing. So it was a pretty impressive performance by Trump. So that changes the political landscape a little bit, back more resetting it back to where it was previously. And we'll talk about that with Daniel in a couple of minutes. We'll be able to patch him in a couple of minutes. But what was interesting, I'll talk about Daniel as well, about all the stories that they held back until the elections, things that might have hurt the Democrats' midterms. The media is basically in concert with the political body in Washington, the ruling Democratic establishment, the media. They're of one mind, one hive mind. So no scandals, no bad news will be aired before elections. That's the rules. And it's just been a flood of stuff. I mean, incredible. Greatest economy ever, says Joe Biden. You kidding me? There's something called the dead cat bounce. I don't know if people understand that concept of the dead cat bounce. I'll just explain it briefly. When they say record job creation or record economic performance or whatever, Trump to some degree is guilty of this in 2021 or 2020, in the latter quarter of 2020. But it was when you shut down the economy because of COVID and the GDP drops 30%, and then you're at negative 30, and then you switch it back on and you have all this quote job creation and economic increase in productivity, and you get like 10% GDP. And then these politicians will go to the cameras and they'll literally in that situation say record GDP growth. We've never seen numbers like 10% job creation. So you went from, you know, massive unemployment, 20%, 25%, 30% unemployment, whatever the real figures were. Let's say 20% unemployment, COVID. And they switch it all back on and people start hiring again. And then what? Oh, record employment. See, that. So you go from 20% unemployment to 10% unemployment, and they'll say record job creation. That's called the dead cat bounce. Or after a major economic collapse, a stock market crash, or a COVID crash, and record gains, huge bounce in the economy. It's called the dead cat bounce. So most people won't pick that up. Some people will. If you're smart, you will. Anyway, we're here to try to give you some of those pointers. Understand the dead cat bounce, because the politicians do. The media do as well. So this is, what else is interesting is that I think this missile thing in Poland was a ruse. I have yet to see the other part of the conversation that's been omitted, is that where was this Russian missile that the Ukrainian air defense was supposedly trying to shoot down, where they fired missiles into the Polish territory? Where is that Russian missile? Where is it? Where was it? Where did it hit? Did they hit it? Did they take it out? What were the intended targets? You don't see any of this. So the worst possible outcome here would be if there was no Russian missile near the Polish border and they fired these missiles into Poland to create a situation. What would that situation be? I have my theories. I think the U.S. has been dropping hints for weeks that things need to go in the direction of a peace talk on this. The hints have been everywhere, because but the U.S., especially the Biden administration, didn't want to admit anything's gone wrong again until after the midterm elections, you see. So Ukraine had to be a resounding success, and they threw everything in the kitchen sink at Kherson City and all this. And Ukraine's winning, yada, 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 same old thing. And that Ukraine can't negotiate, can't come to the peace table until they're in a position of a leverage, a better negotiating position, as if there was such a thing with Russia. But all it matters is that the American people or the people in the West think that. So the media is working that. The White House is working that talking point. And so these missiles, to create a scare, that's a no harm, no foul type situation. And that in a way, Zelensky has shown himself to be an incompetent. So I don't know, when he goes out and puts something on social media and says that NATO must attack, this is in a collective security of NATO, you must escalate for us, Ukraine. Right? Who knows? This guy is such an idiot. He's clearly got handlers. I would say all of his media activity is micromanaged by the CIA. So we have to look at this and say, yeah, he's crazy. He's a psychopath. He's a little monster. But what if his communications are being micromanaged by Washington? Then him putting out the statement that the Russians did it, was this an incident that was staged to try to escalate the military situation there, to try to amp up the war fever with NATO? Or was this designed to basically take Zelensky down a notch and to get Europe and some people to back off and to push things towards peace negotiations? I ask this question because we do have this problem of any Russian missiles in the vicinity that were even trying to be shot down by these alleged errant Ukrainian S-300 missiles that landed in Poland. Slight problem. Where was the Russian missile? So if not, was this a staged event? What was it staged for? You could make the argument that, well, Ukraine confirms signals from the West on peace talks. That's a headline that's circulating today. So Zelensky would agree to negotiations with Russia if they are conducted in a public format. So Zelensky wants to, again, dictate the terms of everything. And he wants it to be on TV, wants a media spectacle. Why would Zelensky want that? Well, he needs to be able to hold court and make these broad statements like, you have violated my people and the death, and how can you, all this sort of stuff. Russia's not going to have it. So he's not in a strong position. He can't dictate terms to Russia, but he's going to try to do it. And if Russia doesn't abide or doesn't accept, then he could throw his hands up and say, well, we tried and they wouldn't. So the war goes on. I don't know how this is going to end up, but it looks like this is a loser for Washington. They're sobering up in Washington. How long can it go on? Do the American people have the appetite to fund it? No, they don't. Will the Republican House of Representatives write out a blank check for the Ukrainians? No, they won't. So if that's the answer to those questions, then the next obvious conclusion is you're going to have a negotiated settlement, and it's going to have to be quick. Otherwise, things are going to get really ugly this winter. Russia likes to fight in winter. Ukrainians don't. Russia does. Russia is very comfortable fighting military operations in the winter. Very comfortable, very prepared, very happy to do so. And what's left of the contested areas of Ukraine could get absolutely steamrolled by Russia this winter. Could happen. They could encircle Kiev again. Could happen. Ukraine is very depleted from a manpower position, from an energy infrastructural supply line position, and also from a military position. They're very depleted. They're very weak. Russia could encircle Kiev and then take Odessa. That would be probably the easiest. Would they take casualties? Would they take losses? Absolutely, they would. But would it be worth it for them? That's the question. That's the question they need to ask themselves. That's the question we need to ask. Because that might be a likely scenario as well. If this peace gambit is not successful here from Washington, or not convincing anyway. Let's take a break and connect our next guest, Daniel Spaulding. Looking forward to this conversation. You're listening to The Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT, Today's News Talk. We'll be right back.
TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Looks like Kevin McCarthy will be back at the helm in the next Congress for 2 years going into 2024. So the question is, can we trust him? The question is, has Kevin McCarthy had an awakening and realized that MAGA is the future of this party? Without MAGA, there is no Republican Party. And GOP, of course, is going to say exactly the opposite, right? They're going to say, well, without our establishment money and without our establishment connections and our establishment bought and paid for journalists, looking at you, Fox News, there'd be no Republican Party. And that may be true. You know, parties come and go. George Washington warned us in his farewell address about factionalism. He saw what was coming. He saw how it was going to be an us versus them, good versus evil, left versus right battle. And sure enough, that's what it's turned into. But parties have come and gone over the years.
The Reckoning with Timothy Shea on Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
St. Joseph's Indian School is much more than a school for Native American children.
It's like a family. Classes are fun here.
I do want to go.
Okay, good.
I am learning about my culture.
I feel safe and loved here.
St. Joe's is more than a school for me.
Since 1927, St. Joseph's Indian School has been a safe haven for Native American children to receive the cultural heritage, education, health care, and caring support they need to succeed in life.
As a father, I feel very good about leaving my kids here. They have way more opportunities here.
Learn more at stjo.org today.
This is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
All right, well, we'll be connecting Daniel Spaulding in a couple of minutes. Patch him in on the live link, and that'll be an interesting conversation. But yeah, where's this peace thing going with Ukraine? I don't know. I don't think at the moment it doesn't look like it's going to actually materialize. Not yet. And the who's holding it up is probably the Ukrainians. Initially, say you want this public format. So Zelensky wants to put on a media show and sort of he wants to, pander to the court of international public opinion, which he feels like he has developed this intimate relationship with the world and with Western politicians and Bono and Sean Penn and Nancy Pelosi. And he's got this gang that support him, supposedly anyway. And it's not, Russians aren't having it. They're not having it. So it's not, there is going to be no public press show, kind of public negotiations televised, and it's not going to happen. It's not how it's done, for obvious reasons. And so I don't know whose statement this is, but it looks like Zelensky here is talking to journalists. I have received signals from state leaders who said, we think Russian President Vladimir Putin wants direct negotiations. And I told them, we will offer public format for the talks because Russia is waging a public war against Ukraine. I mean, this guy is completely in his own world. He thinks he can dictate the terms of everything. He thinks he can dictate the terms of everything and that he is going to design the format for negotiations. And here he goes, I'm ready to recommend such a format. I'll discuss with my colleagues how to do it. I shall do it. We will produce a good format, says Zelensky. Dmitry Peskov, the Kremlin spokesperson, basically said, go take a hike. It's hard to imagine public negotiations. Such a thing doesn't exist. Yeah. Zelensky wants to, he's kind of a postmodernist. He's bought into the Western postmodernist thing, which is if you can imagine it, you can manifest it. So maybe he's a complete New Age crank. I don't know. Or he's just high on something, or a lot of people are speculating on that, by the way. But this guy's, I mean, president, imagine. Imagine at such a crucial time in the country, his country, and in world history, that someone like him's in charge. Unbelievable. It actually beggars belief that, I don't know, it's really beyond. It's really beyond. So anyway, we'll try to keep an eye on that situation and see what we can sort of glean from some of these sort of crazy statements coming out of Kiev. And it's really going from bad to worse. So I don't know, we'll have to put that on the side burner for a moment. But it's just one of those things that that situation, they didn't want it to fall apart before the midterm elections. But now everything's unraveling after the elections. The media is now sort of, you know, airing everything that had been basically buried nicely so as not to damage, I would assume not to damage the Democrats' chances in the midterms. There's a long list of things actually that were buried and triaged that are now coming out. And I think we have Daniel Spaulding on the line. Hello, Daniel. How are you doing?
Hello, Patrick. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yeah. Loud and clear. Loud and clear. It's excellent. And Daniel, before we patched you in, I was just saying there's just this growing list of things or announcements or legal judgments, or it's just an endless list, that none of this came out or was talked about or got any press coverage before the midterm elections. Biden's student loan forgiveness thing, that's been basically squashed. The Mar-a-Lago raid, the FBI raid, nothing. There's nothing there. We just found out yesterday. The FTX crypto scandal, that was the collapse happened on election day. Surprise, surprise. And this one thing after another, and so it's
well, and yeah. You can add to that. I saw that. What's his name? General Milley is already kind of spouting off to the media that he's not so sure Ukraine is in good shape either.
That too. They had to keep that project kind of
all their kind of all that bluster and triumphant rhetoric is there now slowly drip admitting that actually it's not looking too hot for the Ukraine.
Yeah, they had to be seen as a good investment, like because we've given all that money over. We've plowed all that money into it. So no one wants to say this is an absolute loser. This whole project is a waste. It's a disaster. It's risky. All of that. And so now you're starting to see that it's a bit chaotic what's happening. And we've got Biden's bumbling around the Far East with the G20s doing a little world tour. not representing the country particularly well in terms of, you know, competent, stable leadership. He didn't know what country he was in when he was, I mean, what do you make of this? I mean, what's Asia saying about Biden? How are people in Asia viewing Joe Biden?
I can't speak for the whole of Asia. I don't think anyone even here noticed that he was over here. I mean, he can go anywhere, and I don't think anyone notices. He's kind of the representative of absent leadership. So I don't think anyone is really looking to see him or talk to him, because what's it worth? I mean, the guy is clearly, you know, mentally not there. He's not running the, executive branch. He's purely a figurehead. And I think most people around the world, especially in these leadership positions, have to know that. So other than probably doing their, you know, the little pleasantries and such, I don't think anyone really cares that he's over here, because it doesn't matter.
And on the U.S. side, Dan, there was a lot of anticipation of a red wave. We've talked about this before, and it looked like there was going to be a red wave. I mean, based on the polling, Daniel, before the election, it looked like there was going to be a bigger red wave. That said, the Republicans have control of the House of Representatives. That's no small thing. The Senate arguably could end up exactly where it was before, which is basically tied 50-50 with the Vice President, Democrat Kamala Harris, with the tie-breaking vote. No change there if Herschel Walker wins a runoff. But got control of the House, number of other key positions, and arguably, you know, good representation on the popular vote on these congressional districts, flipped a couple in New York. So Republicans didn't have a bad midterms, but it's kind of a psyop, Daniel. The media saying this has been a disaster for the Republicans and a resounding victory for Biden and the Democrats and a repudiation of Trumpism, etc. But that in itself is a psyop, the way this post-midterm narrative is being constructed. That's the way it seems to me, because I can't see how this is some kind of stomping to victory situation for the White House and the Democrats. What's your assessment of this?
I maybe like you, I kind of did expect three. I thought the talk of a red tsunami and stuff was a bit overblown and hype. I'm always weary of that kind of stuff. But I certainly did expect the Republicans to do a lot better in some of these Senate races than they did, specifically in Pennsylvania and Arizona. But, you know, spent the past week or so kind of, you know, chewing on it, thinking, okay, where did some of this analysis, what did it miss? What is wrong? I think, you know, the case of Arizona, there certainly seems to be a lot of funny business with these election machines and these ballots and stuff. So I think as far as, you know, the dirty word, according to liberals, you know, election fraud goes, you know, I'm not saying it happened. I'm not going to make, you know, any concrete or absolute claims, but certainly in the case of Arizona, I wouldn't blame people for having that suspicion. There certainly seems to be a lot of weird and questionable stuff that happened and is floating around there. So that may or may not have kind of affected things there. Pennsylvania, again, there some of that stuff passed, but I don't think that's the real explanation. I was kind of thinking, oh, how could anyone vote for this guy, Fetterman? And I kind of came to the conclusion, like, we gotta recognize that there's a significant percentage of the population who doesn't think in these kind of terms, like, oh, look at this guy, he's mentally unfit, he's a complete, you know, buffoon, and he's, you know, they'll still vote for him because they've so, I guess, deeply imbibed the, you know, liberalism, and it's become this kind of spiritual state for them, a large number of people. And I'm not just talking about party elites or anything, but even like a lot of regular people have just imbibed this stuff so much that they think, oh no, we have to, you know, to be a good person, I have to vote for, you know, the liberal candidate, not that kind of sketchy Republican candidate. So I do think there is that kind of stuff that seeped kind of deep into a lot of people. And it seems like, looking at a lot of the stuff I've seen, is that the Republican Party on the establishment level, Mitch McConnell, etc., did not support these candidates that were not handpicked by the RNC. So the Trump candidates, you know, Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania, Blake Masters, some of these other ones, they weren't picked by Mitch McConnell. They aren't his guys. And he did not put the money into their campaigns. He spent his money helping a Republican run a, you know, run a write-in campaign against another Republican in Alaska. You know, that's how the sort of thing Mitch McConnell does to get Lisa Murkowski, I think, was the one he backed, even though she was not technically the Republican nominee, party nominee. Mm-hmm. So the money thing clearly made a big difference. Money for advertising, you know, getting, especially some of this younger guy, Blake Masters is a younger guy. Not many people know who he is. You know, a guy like that, to get the exposure, he needs the money. He needs that kind of support. He didn't get it. So all this, and I think the other thing seemed to be the Democrats were successful in motivating their people to come out, whereas the Republicans might not have been as, I guess, motivating to get their folks out to the voting.
Yeah, yeah. So Mitch McConnell, they had the vote for the Senate leadership yesterday, and I was a little bit surprised to see McConnell back as Senate Minority Leader. He's widely unpopular with a large number of his Senate colleagues and people in the party who kind of view him as a kind of a rhino gatekeeper. And I think this election should have been the nail in his political coffin, whereby whatever his personal machinations were, that trumped the Senate, you know, getting a majority in the U.S. Senate. It's almost like that wasn't a priority for him. Or is he that far out of touch? Is that type of a person so far out of touch that they don't even can't even grasp the mechanics anymore of the election? What do you think?
I don't think they care. I mean, I don't think it's being about out of touch. I don't think winning the majority was ever his main goal, or especially if having a majority means that he has all these kind of Trumpian, or at least these Trump proteges or backed candidates, which he would not have kind of the stranglehold over that he does over, you know, a lot of others. And he's kind of thinking, again, I saw someone else point out, again, this is not my original thought, but I found it very interesting, is like in a Mitch McConnell and even Trump, I think, falls into this category, is they're not interested in the winning that stuff. So Democrats can win easily because a lot of places, because they give out a lot of goodies to their supporters. They're willing to, you know, plunder the public treasury to give goodies to their supporters to get them to come out and vote. Republicans rather plunder their supporters for goodies. So everything is a grift with them. I saw the Republicans sent out the email to support Herschel Walker in Georgia there. And, you know, you think you're donating money to the Herschel Walker campaign, but I guess the RNC takes 90% of that money and only a smaller percentage actually goes to the Walker campaign. So I don't think they even really care about winning per se. They've got their little mafia organization where they can just continue to milk their Republican supporters. Trump, I'm sorry to say, did this with all that Stop the Steal stuff back in 2020, 21, where, you know, they raised millions and millions of dollars, used almost none of it for its alleged purposes. So I think the Republicans, they're just, I don't even know that, like, I do think individuals, I do think of Blake Master, he wanted to win. I do think some of these guys are serious, but on an establishment level, both the Mitch McConnell wing and increasingly the MAGA wing, it's just a big grift. It's just something they're there for the money. As long as they, you know, and Mitch McConnell in his case too, he's not worried about losing his seat. He's from a safe red state. So as long as he's, you know, got his little turf is taken care of, he's secure. It's just a racket. It's just a money, you know, raising, you know, organization for people like Mitch McConnell.
Yeah. So the big thing about who controls the Senate, one of the big things is whether they can basically veto Biden's appointments for federal judges. And I think Biden pushed through like 50 of them in the last session. He's got another 60 or 80 in January. And there won't be any resistance from that. And that's one of the worst things. So the courts, shaping the courts, not the Supreme Court, but all the other federal courts around the country with activist judges, the types of people that, you know, George Soros would be backing in their. Yeah, go ahead.
And Lindsey Graham will be willing to back.
Yes, yes. So from that point of view, majority of the Senate is massively important. I know that there's no sort of, major filibuster proof majorities or things like that. But in terms of just the federal judge thing, I think that's pretty big. But I don't see them making a big issue about that. I'm wondering how serious some of these people are. Oh, and by the way, since you brought up Lindsey Graham, do you know I saw something interesting, Daniel, is that we're looking at the issue of abortion during the election, and that actually helped the Democrats. Not as big of an issue, but in some of these tight races, 49%, 50%, we have 1 percentage point between, and many of them were tight around the country. Certainly for Arizona, they were. So abortion factored in. There was this impression from some of these polls afterwards that there was some attempt by a federal attempt to outlaw abortions. And where did they get that idea? And Lindsey Graham pushed this bill right before the elections through. I don't think it went anywhere, but he pushed it through for some federal mandate on abortions at certain period in the term or whatever. I don't know if it was, if it was 10 weeks. I can't remember the details of it. But he pushed that through, and I'm like, that was a weird thing to do, and the timing's good, and it didn't succeed. It wasn't going to succeed. Why did he do it? By doing it, he shifted a lot of moderate Democrats or people on the fence, or he pushed them into more hardcore positions, because then the response they had in the polls was, well, we don't want a federal – we don't want the Republicans to have control of the Senate or the House or whatever, because we don't want – a federal ban on abortion. So where'd you get that idea? Lindsey Graham's legislation. So isn't that amazing?
You almost wonder if he was trying to poison the well.
Yeah. Because no, I'm wondering who does he work for? Who does he work for? That's I'm wondering.
I mean, I always found Lindsey Graham to be this kind of gatekeeper, managing figure. During the Trump administration, he presented himself as, I'm going to get to the bottom of Russiagate. I'm going to, haul all these guys in. And he did have some guys come in. He wags his finger at them, but then let them all, get out of there without doing anything about it. He's a really good talker. He tells Republicans what they want to hear, but he doesn't, there's no follow through. And I think intentionally so. And then, this recent example where he's just hurling this thing out there, knowing full well it's never going to go anywhere, especially since currently the Senate is in the minority. I mean, the Republicans, rather, are in the minority in the Senate. There's no way they could get this. Even if they had 51, 52 senators, I'm skeptical such a thing could pass. I think a lot of Republican senators would vote against it, either because they don't really take abortion that seriously, or just because they're afraid of losing elections, and maybe they're in a kind of swing state or something like that, that they would not go for that. So it's something that would be dead on arrival either way. So that he would kind of throw that out there, and he might claim, oh, I want to get the conservative kind of evangelicals to come out and vote. I don't know that it would motivate them enough to come out, but certainly it would motivate, as you mentioned, maybe moderate Democrats or Democrat-leaning independents who might have been willing to go over to the Republicans otherwise, but who felt, no, that's kind of a sacred issue, if you will, for better or for worse. It's kind of a sacred issue for them that's a bridge too far for us. We can't do that. And we're going to come out and make sure that Democrats win, so that even if there's not any change in the status quo, at least it's not going to go in that direction that Lindsey Graham proclaimed he was seeking to bring things.
I felt like that John McCain had done a walk in there, like the ghost of John McCain stepped into Lindsey Graham. It just felt like, you remember John McCain with the Obamacare? repeal,
right. Yeah.
The thumbs down. You remember that? He tanked the whole thing, just him. So it's like Graham was doing the same thing. And I never viewed John McCain as a Republican. I've always viewed him as a kind of establishment, establishment liberal in a sense, but definitely not a conservative. And I think Lindsey Graham, deep down, he, like you said, he talks a good ball game, but I think he is an establishment, kind of a plant in a way, to keep things from happening that should happen. I don't know.
But Sean Hannity loves him, so he continues to remain this kind of celebrity amongst Republicans, apparently. So.
Yeah, very good talker, very good talker. That's about all it is a lot of hot air coming from South Carolina there. But I'm here with Daniel Spaulding, doing a little bit of a post-mortem on the U.S. midterms. We'll expand this conversation and more after the break. You're listening to Patrick Hankson's show on TNT, Today's News Talk. We'll be right back.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
I haven't said a whole lot about the climate conference going on over in Egypt. As a matter of fact, what I did was I put an old Saturday Night Live skit with Steve Martin doing King Tut on so I could get a big laugh out of that. But Mark Morano and Craig Rucker have been over there talking about it quite a bit. And of course, it was a big deal. It was a big deal because of the lack of any progress that was really made. And the reason no progress is really being made is people are waking up to this one way or the other. First of all, if they're believing that there's global warming, a lot of the more underdeveloped countries are saying, whoa, 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 how come we have to suffer with this? And then there are other people that don't believe that this is the big disaster coming, but they all got together, had a nice time, saw the pyramids, saw the Sphinx and whatever was going on over there. It's just too bad their carbon footprint was so high. This is TNT Weather Watchdog, Climate Watchdog also. I keep getting this outro mixed up. Joe Bastardi, I do know my name, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
G'day, Bob's Removals.
Oh, hi. I have a TV I'd like to move.
Just a TV?
Yes.
Where to?
Over near the window.
Right.
You wouldn't call a removalist just to shift your telly, would you? So why call an ambulance when it's not really needed and your doctor, pharmacist or 13 Health could help? Remember, only call 000 for an ambulance if you believe it's life-threatening, critical or serious. Authorised by the Queensland Government, Brisbane.
Patrick Henningsen and TNT.
Okay, we're into the final segment of the final hour here. I'm with Daniel Spaulding, and we're talking about the U.S. midterm elections, the aftermath, what the takeaways are. And Daniel, I think it's just incredible here that I'm looking at the state of California. I mean, Arizona's bad, but there is no less than 10 districts, congressional districts in California. They're still counting the votes. Congressional districts are not that large, Daniel. And I'm wondering, why is it taking 2 weeks to count 300,000 votes? What's going on here? I know the Republicans have control of the House, but this is just ridiculous. When did this start happening that it took so long to count votes? It's not workable. It's not workable.
I think it started seemingly with, you know, the last presidential election, using COVID as this cover to kind of instate all this weird, all this stuff, ballot harvesting and all these weird new terms that have entered into the lexicon, political lexicon. I think that's kind of when it started. You know, COVID provided this opportunity to go the way that Democrats kind of wanted to go, with these, you know, the stream of ballots and stuff coming in. Some, you know, real, sure, some of dubious origins and questionable authenticity, but nevertheless, kind of creating this system that chaotic and drawn out, dragged out, which favors Democrats. I think if this happened, oddly enough, and I've seen other people, again, this is not my original idea, but I've seen other people point it out, and it seems like the right idea to me, is that if other countries did this, if this was Pakistan doing this, or Iran or some other country, Venezuela, the U.S. would say, oh, this is a proof of fraud. This is a proof the ruling party is committing some kind of election fraud or something of this, sinister kind of thing going on. But for them, no, I see CNN, John King on CNN the other day, this is totally normal. This is a sign of our, democracy, that it takes all this, the results are going to take days, perhaps even a week before we know all the results. But that's a sign of our vibrant democracy. And, this weird Orwellian kind of thing where, they'll kind of excuse it, justify it, Democrats, the media, et cetera. So I think basically this whole thing, the way that's set up with these weird ballot harvesting and I learned a new term recently, ballot curing. There's all these kind of weird new words that essentially are set up to make the system chaotic, confusing, and allow for any needed manipulation to make sure that results are the ones that are desired or intended.
Yeah, because here in Arizona, it doesn't make sense that on some races, they're still counting the ballots on the Attorney General's race, which is Abe Hamadeh and Chris Mays. That's a female Chris Mays. 50-50, 50%, 50%. Now, I know everybody that voted for Abe Hamadeh voted for Carrie Lake. That's 100% almost certainty. But yet the same thing, Blake Masters was on a ticket with Carrie Lake, and Abe Hamadeh, the U.S. Senate candidate, Blake Masters, Republican, and he seemed to come up short on the votes. Why was that? And so it is very opaque. It is very opaque, and the longer it takes, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. A lot of pressure is being put to bear on the state. The longer it takes, the worse it's going to be. In my opinion, it means that more can go wrong the longer you string it out.
But it's kind of this banana republic thing that the U.S. would accuse other, emerging democracies of in the past, where they would, any kind of seeming irregularities or things like this would be an obvious sign of fraud or mm-hmm. some kind of, but when it's them, they find a way to not just defend it, but praise it and make it as proof of how vibrant and our democracy is. Worked for Biden.
It did.
Maybe that's the new normal. Maybe that's the new normal.
I think, sadly, Daniel, early voting and not campaigning, that is the new normal. So yeah. That's not, quote, democracy in my book. Where people don't have to run a campaign. It means that all votes are predetermined based on your party affiliation and nothing else matters. That's the argument Katie Hobbs made. I don't want to debate. I don't have to campaign or speak because it's not going to make a difference in my results. She's almost like she knew what the result was going to be. She was so confident.
And that goes to this whole ballot harvesting thing where they go to places where they know that they can either get the results they want, or if they don't, they can kind of pick through and keep what they want and discard what they don't want, or perhaps even add what they want.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you have unsolicited mail-in votes, and here's another point, okay? Look at how close the Arizona governor race is. Less than a percentage point. Okay, they're still counting the votes, by the way, even though they quote called it for Katie Hobbs, the Democrat. It's so close. There should be a runoff. There should be a petition for a runoff. Guess what, Daniel? They can't have a runoff in Arizona. Why? Because they won't have time to organize the mail-in ballots. You see how this works? So you can't even exercise the full extent of the democratic process because of mail-in votes. Why mail-in votes? COVID. Or convenience.
But even as COVID kind of recedes further and further into the background, this is not going to go away.
No, they want.
There's not going to come a point. Not going to come a point and say, "Oh, COVID is," or you know, "that's kind of a yesterday's problem. We can go back to the old way." No, that's not going to happen.
No, they want to increase mail-in ballots.
Well, I was going to say, if Republicans want to win, they got to get very serious about this. They can't just keep treating it as a kind of something to whine and grumble about, raise some money off it, but then put it on the back burner until next election. They got to get very serious on the state level. State legislatures, governors, et cetera, need to get really serious about it. Because I think they can only do it on the state level. I don't think you can expect anything on the federal level.
No, it's all about the state level. You're right, Daniel. So Time Magazine running this cover of all these defenders of democracy, they're all the sort of apparatchiks from all the sort of like state operatives. So basically these are the election engineers. They're all Democrats. That's what Time is highlighting. And so I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Daniel. I think if the Republicans don't understand or are not interested or can't throw the money for the campaigns like Secretary of State, County Recorder, all of these things, if they don't control the mechanics of the elections, or they don't take these sort of operatives out from the mechanics of the election positions at the state level, then these states, even though Arizona is not a blue state, it'll be permanently blue after each election. And even though it's not a blue state, it's definitely a majority conservative state, but they're not interested in the bureaucracy, the minutia. Democrats love the minutia. They love the bureaucracy. They get in there. They can work it on from the local level to the national level. They've centralized elections here. They got rid of precincts because of COVID in Arizona.
And Democrats have that whole like lawfare thing. They've weaponized the legal system and very effectively. You got to kind of hand it to them on that level. Like Mark Elias, I think, was down there in Arizona to make sure every junk Democrat ballot would get counted.
That's right. Yeah. The lawfare, absolutely. Absolutely. They're way ahead on all this stuff. And this is serious business. If you want it, if you don't want it that bad and you're not willing to take that seriously and invest in what it takes to, you know, wrestle control of that, if you're not willing to fight for it, you're going to lose it. And I'm afraid to say, and this might sound like a partisan statement, but one side is willing to play dirty and one side is not. And I think that's going to be a fatal mistake in the long run. I don't think they realize the scale of this, Daniel.
Well, and it's made me, like, I initially, prior to this, I was a little more, I guess, bullish on Trump's chances to win a second term. I'm much more bearish about it now. I'm much more skeptical that Republicans could win a candidate on a national level, regardless of Biden's popularity, regardless of all that stuff, is because this infrastructure, this election infrastructure, these is geared towards helping Democrats win. And in the states where they need it, Pennsylvania, Arizona, these are key states that a Trump or DeSantis or whoever they end up running in 2024. I see a lot of these guys, Cernovich and ever, you know, pronouncing Trump dead and DeSantis, he's the heir apparent, he's going to win. If Trump can't win it, DeSantis can't win it. And as long as these kind of mechanisms and this mechanic, you know, this machinery of elections is run this way, it doesn't matter who has the R next to their name, they're not going to be able to win in these key battleground states.
No, that's absolutely the case. So, like, yeah, Arizona, Maricopa County, one county will decide the U.S. presidency, or Clark County in Nevada for instance, whether that goes, you know, red or blue. That's going to, so that's what it comes down to in a couple of these, especially these late counting swing states like Nevada and Arizona that take a week to count their ballots, that all election results for control of the Senate, House, presidency are going to be decided by these two counties in these two swing states. You could say the same about a few other places, Fulton County, Atlanta, for instance, another one of those. If there's a Democratic machine there, I'm talking about bureaucratic machine, election management machine, your chances of winning are not good. And so I'm with you, Daniel. I'm much more bearish after witnessing a replay of the 2020 elections here in terms of the way things have been conducted, the dodgy stuff. Is anyone going to be held accountable for this Arizona debacle, for instance? I don't know. But, you know, you got to be willing to spend $10-20 million for a local Secretary of State office campaign, and they're not doing it. So that means
they're not willing. They're just not willing.
Yeah.
Mitch McConnell, these guys, they're not willing to put the money into it.
So this is not good. This really isn't good. So that's what's going on that side. And on the J6 side, the January 6th thing, now that's damaged Trump. But that's kind of unraveling a little bit. There's a couple of stories that came out this week. Proud Boys, 8 FBI informants embedded in the Proud Boys. Enrico Torino is an FBI informant. He's the head of the Proud Boys, Oath Keeper, Vice President, FBI informant. So it's becoming more and more visible now that, and Christopher Wray was given a dressing down in front of the, I believe it was a Senate congressional hearing, and it was asked, were there FBI informants dressed like Trump supporters before the Capitol was breached on January 6th? And Christopher Wray, the FBI director, would not answer the question. It's a yes or no question. He said, one to protect confidential sources, whatever. So is the FBI the one who is leading January 6th? Like, were they the vanguard, the FBI? Because that's what it looks like.
Well, like with this guy, Ray Epps, I mean, that's the name that keeps coming up. And Liz Cheney and everyone else seems very eager and ready to protect someone who is on video multiple times inciting the crowd to attack or, you know, enter the Capitol building. And he's not sitting in one of these DC jails. He's not been brought up on any charges to my knowledge. And this January 6th committee seems totally uninterested in him. Not interested. They seem more, willing to protect him than, you know, bring him up and put him in the hot seat, put him on public hearing or something. So,
yeah, there's a few more of those types of characters I've seen.
Yeah, he's not the only one, definitely.
But he's a major figure. But there's just too many of them, and you should be able to put two and two together. I think some intelligent people could just put two and say, look, if it walks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, it's a duck, and you can't take the FBI out of this story because they're so well embedded into it that I don't know. It's obvious to me, but for some people, they can't see.
Well, as I say, the only kind of one of the few bright possibilities coming with, you know, the Republicans taking control of the House is I do think some of them are very interested to get to the bottom of it. And hopefully once they're in charge of these committees, Matt Gaetz and some of these other ones, that we'll get some real answers.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. With that power, I hope they do the right thing instead of going and chasing the origins of COVID, like looking for a lab leak in Wuhan. I fear that there's going to be
or digging through Hunter's laptop for the 100th time and seeing his kind of porn pictures or something.
Well, which are already out. I mean, God, there's nothing to see. I mean, are they going to waste that opportunity? That's a question that remains to be answered, Daniel. And I dare say I'm not confident that they won't. but we'll leave it there for today. But thank you, Daniel Spaulding, for chiming in this week. Much appreciated. Much appreciated. Thank you to Blake Lovewell in the first hour as well. And thank you to everybody listening to this show on the live broadcast. We very much appreciate it.